Hey, it's Kitty, and I am reading chapter 4 from the Betty Dodson's book, Sex for One, The Joy of Self-Loving. And this chapter is called Sex Art. As a classically trained artist, I painted the nude. I thought of my art as sensual, never overtly sexual. My art had always remained on the periphery of sex. But the first year after my divorce, I was so sex-affirmative and in love with life that it was the most natural thing in the world for me to say, of course, I'm going to create magnificent drawings of people celebrating sexual love. I began to transfer my experiences in bed onto paper. That decision turned out to be an important one. As a creative person, I'd consistently struggled against social restrictions and censorship. However, the worst repression was the kind of censorship I'd been taught to apply to myself. What will people think? Once I put my sexual ideas down on paper, I was letting go of self-censorship, embracing a much larger concept of freedom to express myself. I went public with my erotic art in 1968. It was my first one-woman exhibition and was held in a prestigious New York gallery. Naturally, the idea of displaying my interest in sex publicly generated an enormous amount of fear. I understand that. I envisioned irate citizens throwing rocks through gallery windows, or my getting busted for pornography. But I also knew that every new adventure in my life had always been preceded by fear. So instead of not wanting to be afraid, I put my arms around fear like I was hugging an old friend, and we went arm in arm to the opening. I needn't have worried. My large charcoal drawings of classical nudes making love behind sheets of brightly colored plexiglass created a sensation. My heterosexual erotic art was quite acceptable. The exhibition was a beautiful and enormously successful event. Most of the drawings were sold. The gallery was on the block next to the Whitney Museum, a perfect location. Even though advertising was largely word of mouth, over 8,000 people attended the exhibition in a two-week period, the largest number the gallery had ever recorded. There were many incidents that were funny, embarrassing, exciting, and also sad, but all of them were profoundly educational. One mother got halfway into the room with her 10-year-old daughter before she realized what the show was about. Obviously, she had missed the sign on the door. "Oh my," she gasped. "We don't want to look at these pictures." "Why not, mother? It's just a bunch of people wrestling," the child said. But she was whisked out of the gallery. One fact was undeniable. People were interested in sex. The erotic art triggered many visitors into giving me mini sex histories. I was sharing a new kind of intimacy with complete strangers. It was a rich and rewarding experience that included many blessed moments of liberating truth. One important insight I had was that women were more willing to exchange sex information than men. At the gallery, women talked about their fears and hang-ups, and they asked lots of questions. Men were less open. They mostly made jokes and acted cool. Somehow men were supposed to have gained enough sexual expertise to teach women about sex, but having to project a masculine image at all times kept them from learning. If you already know all the answers, you can't ask questions. I concluded from the experience that women have to lead the way to sexual freedom and expression. I really like that paragraph. 'Cause it makes sense. I feel like, hold on, I'm gonna yawn. Sorry. I feel like she's right that men are kind of expected to be the like leaders in teaching women about sex in those early days when everyone's kind of getting started. But they're also less able to talk about it with one another and admit when they don't know something or admit when they're nervous about something or shy or self-conscious. So That must be hard. Okay. After hearing so many personal stories, I also discovered that nearly everyone was affected by socially imposed sex-negative attitudes. Many of these sex histories dealt with unnecessary pain and suffering, often from simple lack of information. I became more convinced than ever that masturbation was crucial to women's liberation. The bottom line of repression was our inability to touch our own bodies for sexual pleasure. In a moment of divine madness, I decided to devote my second exhibition to self-love. I had visions of the redemption of masturbation in my fashionable Madison Avenue gallery. Everyone said I was nuts because the drawings would never sell. They were absolutely right, but it was an invaluable experience in raising my sexual consciousness. Getting models to masturbate for me was a lot more difficult than getting couples to pose had been, which was illuminating commentary in itself. Finally, with a little help from my friends, I got it down on paper. I completed 4 life-size classical nudes, 2 males and 2 females, all joyfully masturbating to orgasm. I thought they were beautiful. But when the drawings arrived at the gallery the day of the opening, all hell broke loose. The director refused to hang the 4 nudes as planned, so I threatened to pull the whole show. After an exhausting argument, 2 of the masturbation drawings were hung. It was clear that exhibiting drawings of people jacking and jilling off was going to cause problems. Why was self-love so terrifying? That night, the main wall in the front room of the elegant establishment held the 6-foot drawing of my girlfriend Nicole, legs apart, clitoris erect, approaching orgasm with her electric vibrator. Actually, she usually masturbated wearing her stereo earphones and enjoyed penetration using a peeled cucumber along with her vibrator. But for artistic purposes, I'd simplified her technique. And in the adjoining room, there was the second 6-foot drawing of my boyfriend Adam, legs apart, penis erect, approaching orgasm by hand. And the book has these pictures in them, so I can add those too when I post this. The response to this show was even more fascinating and informative than the response to the first one. A lot of women said they'd never masturbated. Men who admitted they masturbated made it clear that they would rather get laid. That's in quotes, get laid. Some men didn't know women even masturbated, while others were turned on by the idea of watching a woman, quote, do herself. Men got into the drawing of the woman, but quickly went past the one of the man, while women looked at both pictures. The vibrator made several men hostile and competitive. One viral stud, V-I-R-I-L-E, viral stud, said empathetically, "If that was my woman, she wouldn't have to use that thing." In response, I encouraged cooperation instead of competition. It was like competing with the electric company, which seldom had power failures. Besides, an electric vibrator was available 24 hours a day. Fielding hundreds of questions, I assured people that masturbation was healthy. No, you can't get warts. Yes, the woman with the vibrator in the picture has a boyfriend. He's standing right over her next to her. No, despite what society tells us, intercourse isn't necessarily better. It's just different. No, masturbation doesn't eliminate the desire for partner sex. It enhances it. Yes, I do both and love it all. Some of the stories I heard in which people were severely punished for childhood masturbation brought tears to my eyes. A woman told me about an incident when she was 7 years old. Her mother came in to kiss her goodnight, sniffed her daughter's fingers, and slapped her face, saying, "It smells like you've had your hand in a garbage pail." Oh. The woman confessed that to this day, she was still unable to touch her genitals, and she was always uncomfortable when her husband touched them. She'd never experienced an orgasm during 20 years of marriage, though she loved her husband dearly. The exhibition was held in 1970, and the vibrator revolution hadn't gotten underway, so many women I talked to had never heard of using an electric massage machine for sex. When I described it, every woman was convinced she'd be instantly addicted. I explained that although I loved my vibrator, I was still involved with, quote, regular sex. My observation had been that women who like vibrators also like sex, or were starting to enjoy sex for the first time. If I had any doubts, the 2 weeks I spent in the gallery made it clear that sexual repression related directly to the repression of masturbation. It followed then that masturbation could be important in reversing sexual repression. Seeking sexual satisfaction is a basic desire, and masturbation is our first natural sexual activity. It's the way we discover our eroticism, the way we learn to respond sexually, the way we learn to love ourselves and to build self-esteem. Sexual skill and the ability to respond are not, quote, natural in our society. Quote, doing what comes naturally is to be sexually inhibited. Sex, like any other skill, has to be learned and practiced. When a woman masturbates, she learns to like her own genitals, to enjoy her orgasms, and furthermore, to become proficient in sex. But some people are made very uncomfortable by the idea of a sexually proficient and independent woman. In spite of a sexual revolution, the pill, and the women's movement, the sexual double standard is still alive and well. Men continue to have social approval to be sexually assertive, independent, and experienced, while women are expected to be sexually passive, dependent, and inexperienced. Fixed in non-sexuality and a supporting role, most women seek security rather than new experiences and sexual gratification. The way women are made to conform to this double standard is through the deprivation of sexual self-knowledge. Deprived of their own bodies, they have no way of discovering or developing sexual response. At an early age, women are prohibited from touching their genitals with the threat of supernatural or real punishment. That happens to men too, by the way. That's just like a side note. In talking to a lot of you, I've heard the same thing, that you were, you know, threatened with going to hell if you ever touch yourself. So that's not just women, but that's her perspective on it. Okay. Information about the clitoris and life-affirming orgasm is withheld, and women are instilled with the idea that female genitals are inferior, that a woman's main value lies in procreation and giving a man sexual pleasure. Without any sexual pleasure of her own, a woman may come to think of her genitals as being repulsive or a constant source of discomfort and shame. This kind of sexual repression is a vital aspect of keeping women in their, quote, proper role. The most insidious part of this system is that we women end up accepting the male definition of, quote, normal female sexuality. We are taught to maintain the two sexual views of women, Madonna or whore, by socially ostracizing all non-conforming women. When we put down masturbation and overt displays of healthy female sexuality, we embellish our pedestals to become the next generation of the keepers of social morality. The matriarchy is the necessary support system and moral police force for the patriarchy. Ooh, that's a good quote. The matriarchy is the necessary support system and moral police force for the patriarchy. I was overwhelmed with the full realization of how effectively women had been turned into sexless mothers and docile house slaves. Feeling the enormity of the sexual damage done to women, I started calling every woman I knew and loved, asking each one if she was joyfully masturbating. Okay. I would not be able to do that. And maybe that's illuminating. But, like, I feel like, I don't know. I'll come back to that. Okay, so she said, Feeling the enormity of sexual damage done to women, I started calling... Sorry. I started calling every woman I knew and loved, asking each one if she was joyfully masturbating. If she was, I gave her encouragement to continue. And if she wasn't, I suggested she start immediately. It was my first telephone campaign to get women's sexual liberation underway. One of those calls was long distance to Kansas, to my mother. At the time, she was 69 and living alone, a widow of several years. I started right off with, "Mother, are you masturbating to orgasm?" My gosh. There was a sputtering pause, and then she answered, "Why, Betty Ann, of course not. I'm too old for that sort of thing." I immediately launched into my whole rap about the connection between good health and orgasm. If nothing else, she could do it as a physical exercise to keep the lining of the vaginal wall lubricating, the hormones secreting, and the uterus contracting. Besides, it was a great way to relax and unwind. It might possibly reduce her lower back pains. She could also do it just for fun. This time there was a long, thoughtful pause. "Well, honey, I don't know. What you say does make sense. You always have such different ideas from most people, but I think you're probably right." Our next conversation 2 weeks later was wonderful. Yes, she'd successfully and easily masturbated to orgasm. Mother said it had been pleasant, and she felt that afterwards she'd slept more soundly. Then she chuckled and said it could never compare with, quote, the real thing. That phone call opened up our sexual dialogue, which had been silent for nearly 20 years. We gradually began to include sex talk in our conversations, exchanging information about masturbation, and even sharing our masturbation histories. She had masturbated regularly as a child. When she was going with my father, she often masturbated after a date because she was so turned on. This way, she maintained her virginity until her wedding night. After marriage, she never masturbated again. One surprise for me. She remembered my masturbating in the back seat of the car when I was 5 years old and we were on our way to California. At the time, I didn't think about the rearview mirror and had no idea she knew. "Why hadn't she stopped me?" "That was such a long trip," she explained. "You were having fun, and I didn't want to bother you." She associated masturbation with the harmless pleasure from her own childhood experiences. My love and gratitude for her were very real. I'd been raised by an orgasmic mother. I feel like that's really sweet. And definitely weird in my estimation of what I think conversations between mothers and daughters are. Like, I've never talked about anything close to that with my mom, other than when we were watching Bridgerton, and there's that's a show that came out recently, and there's a whole theme of the show about this young woman, and she didn't know about masturbation, and the guy she was talking to, this is back in like, I don't know how to tell dates and stuff, but back in the day of like balls and things, and the guy she's having a conversation with talks to her about like what sex is like, because she asks him, and he said it's like when you touch yourself alone, but with two people, and she's never heard of it, and he kind of tells her what to do. And there's another scene later in the show where she has a fight with her mom about the fact that she didn't know anything, and my mom got really, like, embarrassed sitting next to me during these scenes and made it really uncomfortable for both of us. And I think she made like a comment of like, why does the show have to go into something like that? Right at a scene when the daughter was expressing like how painful it was that she didn't know anything. and that her mom could have helped her and told her ahead of time. And I kind of snapped back at her about, like, the irony of me and her watching this together and it being a moment of positive sex dialogue between a mother and a daughter, and her comment being like, ugh, why would they have to put something like that in a show? And it diffused, and we kept watching, and we didn't really talk about it again, but, like, I don't know. That's not something... I feel embarrassed for the level of embarrassment I feel for my mom when we watch things like that. So, I don't know. That whole conversation, reading about that, that's really sweet. Okay. One time I asked Mother if she ever talked about masturbation with any of her friends. She said yes. A friend of hers was complaining about a terrible vaginal itch that the doctor had been unable to cure. Mother suggested that masturbation might help. Her friend stopped calling after that conversation. Mother decided to never to bring up the subject again. People were just too ignorant. I totally supported her. Enjoying her own orgasms was her personal sexual revolution, and it was quite enough. Not only did society try to pretend that women had modest sex drives, it also made sex for older people seem obscene or abnormal. I gave Mother a lot of credit for repudiating the myth, and I openly acknowledged her as a radical feminist, which she loved. Aw. My father died the year I got divorced in 1966, so we never had any discussions about my, quote, going public with sex art. Daddy was a very straight-laced man when it came to sex. He was the strong, silent type until he had a few drinks. Then he became the life of the party. But I know he would never have approved of the turn of my life. But I know he would never have approved of the turn my life was about to take at the beginning of the 70s. Meanwhile, I was grateful for my ongoing sexual conversations with Mother. Talking honestly about sex helped my mother and me to start breaking through the power struggle that existed between us. Mother was a strong-willed woman who wanted the best for me. She was full of advice, directives, and ultimatums. I was very much like her with my strong-willed rebellion and determination to live my own life. Gradually, we began to see each other as individual people separate from our mother and daughter roles. We became friends. I no longer called her once a week out of a sense of duty, but because I looked forward to our conversations. Her one consistent worry about me was that I might give up my art. Aw. I never did. I simply expanded my definition of it to include the fine art of teaching sex. If math is the queen of science, then sex is queen of the arts. Sex art is called erotic art by some and pornography by others. But it has always been around, and it will continue to be part of the human experience in spite of all efforts at censorship. Most artists have done their share of sex art at one time or another. There are several reasons we don't get to see it. Among them, museums censor it, or it's held in archives not available to the public, or it ends up being destroyed by the artist. The reason we have the category of erotic art in the first place is because our society is sexually repressive. As a result, sex has never been integrated into our culture as a natural part of life. But artists have gotten around this censorship by creating some very sensuous, religious, and mythological paintings. The nude human body speaks to us of erotic moments of the flesh that remain conscious or buried in the cellular structure of our body's memories. Sex energy and creative energy are parts of the same life force that draws us to it like the warmth of a summer sun or the light of a full moon. Everyone I've ever spoken to intimately has told me how important masturbation is to their creative process. Taking an orgasm break can work in different ways. It can bring my energy level up when it lags. It can relax me when I get too tense. Or it can clear away the mental cobwebs so I can solve the creative problem at hand. For the most part, I use orgasm breaks to set me up for another round of creativity with a renewed burst of energy. That's the end of the chapter. I think that's a good one. I said I was going to come back to something, and I don't remember what it was. So let me know if there, if you remember it and you were curious. And also, let me know how you feel about all that. I think that was a good chapter, and I think that story about her and her mom and how their relationship developed was sweet. But it's, I guess, making me a little sad because I don't think that's something that would be in the cards for me. I guess this is kind of more of a personal thing, but I wonder about, you know, what realistically would or will happen when my family were to ever find this Reddit account. And I think, my dad would actually be able to be more accepting than my mom. I think my mom would be truly horrified. I think I would probably lose my relationship with her over it. At least for a period of time, but depending on if people in her world found out too and she had to deal with that, with people talking to her about it, bringing it up to her, something like that. I don't know that that's something she would forgive me for. And I've made a really conscious effort to take a look at the ways in which I have lived a fear-based life, and I think fear of disappointing my parents or embarrassing them has always been big for me. But I haven't gone into this whole, I guess, content creation, exploring, sharing, you know, public diary thing without considering it. It's not like I'm having kind of a cross my fingers and hope it never happens mentality. I've thought a lot about it and the fact that, you know, it very well likely could come out. And and I guess, like, even saying that, like, what could come out? I could be outed for masturbating and showing people and talking about it, and could be outed for having a body that experiences pleasure and having, you know, female body parts and curves underneath my clothes that I'm not ashamed of. And I don't mind people knowing about or seeing. And it's a body that my parents made. But I could lose them over acknowledging it.
So, I don't blame my mom. I guess I blame the whole world. I don't know. All the conditioning. Definitely, like, the church. Sorry. I mean, if there is a God friend or a Jesus friend or a Mother Earth friend, I'm not blaming them. I'm blaming the people. But I don't know. I don't know. Maybe you guys can help me figure all that out. But when I really, you know, think about it, I do think I'm making intentional decisions, and I'm trying to be brave, and I'm trying to take ownership over my body and my sexuality. And if I've really decided not to be embarrassed about it, not to be ashamed of it, and if that decision makes me lose people, even very special people, then c'est la vie. I hope it doesn't happen though.